ברוכים הבאים, ladies, welcome. תשקו לשנים רבות, נעימות וטובות. We are just a little more than a day away from the holiday of Sukkot. In the previous years, we haven't had an opportunity to say Hiddushim and Devre Torah on Sukkot. Usually, we don't have this class. It's before the holiday, people are busy. So we made an exception this year because we want to have on record something to say for Sukkot. It's always this time of year, everybody's so caught up with their mitzvot that we don't have a chance to talk about the philosophy of the holiday. So I want to begin today with saying a Devre Torah from the Gaon Mevilna, Gaon Rabbi Eliyahu from Vilna. He said in his Sidur, he has a Sidur of the Gaon. In the Sidur of the Gaon, he has all interpretations of the Tefillah. One of the prayers that we say on the holiday is, Ata bechartanu mikol ha'amim, ahabta otanu, veratzita banu. What does it mean? I'll explain it to you. Ata bechartanu mikol ha'amim, God, you chose us from all the nations. That we understand. Ahabta otanu, you love us. Ahavat olam, ahavtanu, like we say in the tefillah. Veratzita banu. Veratzita banu means you wanted us. Or more so, you appeased us. You were happy with us. Veratzita banu. So the Gaon explains that these three terminologies are corresponding the three holidays. Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. And he says, Ata bechartanu mikol ha'amim, you chose us from all the nations. That's talking about Pesach. When did God choose us as a nation? Yesiat Mitzrayim. Before that, we weren't a united nation. We weren't unified. When we left Egypt, God chose us as his people. Ata bechartanu mikol ha'amim, that is Pesach. And then we say, Ahavta otanu, that's Shavuot. How did God show us his love? He gave us the Torah. The Torah is a gift. And if I love somebody, what do I do to them? I give them a matana, I give them a gift. The Torah is the greatest gift that mankind ever received. I always say when we go to a Sefer Torah dedication, and they dedicate something in honor of their parents, they give a Sefer Torah in memory of their parents, or a Sefer Torah in honor of a friend or something, I always say it's the greatest gift that you can give anybody. Whatever you're going to give them is temporary. This is the word of God. Even till today, the best seller on all the book lists is the Bible. There's nothing more precious than the Sefer Torah itself. So God gave us that gift on Shavuot. So it says, Ahavta otanu, by giving us the Torah. But here's what I want to focus on today. Veratzita banu. Ratzita banu, he says, is Sukkot. Ah, what does Ratzita banu have to do with Sukkot? So he says, because after the Jewish people received the Torah, 40 days later, we worshipped the golden calf, as you remember. You weren't there, I know, but you remember in the story. Which means, the golden calf, they took the earrings and they melted the gold down, and they said, Ele Elohecha Yisrael, this is the God that took you out of Egypt, and God was infuriated. God was so angry. God told Moshe, Lech red, go down, Kishihet Amecha, your nation has deteriorated. And we know Moshe Rabbeinu came down with the tablets, and Moshe Rabbeinu saw what was going on, and he shattered them. He broke the tablets into pieces. And God told Moshe, I had enough with these people. They're rebellious. You know what? Let's destroy them, God forbid, and we'll build a new nation, and you'll be the leader of that nation. Moshe Rabbeinu said, nothing doing. If you're going to destroy them, destroy me with them. It's like a captain that says he wants to go down with the ship, which is a proper leader. And then eventually, God forgave the Jewish people for the egel. He gave them kapara. He told them, salachti. Okay, I forgive you. So he says, veratzita banu. God forgave us. He appeased us. He said, okay, he accepted our repentance, so to speak, and he forgave us. And the Gaon Mevilna says, that's Sukkot. I have no idea what the Gaon Mevilna is talking about. What does the egel have to do with Sukkot? making us a nation, I can connect to Pesach. Yeah, when we came out of Egypt, we became a nation. He loves us. He gave us a Torah. That's Shavuot. I have no problem. But forgiving us for the sin of the Egel. He said, Salahti. Oh, that's Sukkot. What does God do with Sukkot? It's a mystery to understand this Gaon Mevilna. Furthermore, I want to ask you another question. I'm only going to ask you three questions. So I asked you one already. So I have two more. And then I'm going to answer them. Of course I'm going to answer them. Sometimes I just ask questions. If I don't know the answer, I can't answer. But today I know the answer. The second question is like this. We celebrate Sukkot. One of the reasons, it says in the books, the primary reason, is because when we left Egypt, we went into the wilderness, into the Midbar. There's nothing in the Midbar. The Midbar is desolation. And it's also very dangerous. You know, in the wilderness, in the desert, there's snakes, and there's scorpions, and there's wild animals, and in the day it gets very hot, and at night it gets very cold. So you need to be protected from the elements. Not only that, the ground in the desert is not always flat. There's terrain that's deep, and then there's mountainous areas. How did the Jewish people go into the desert and be protected from all these elements? So the rabbis tell us, and you know this already, we had clouds of glory. That's called Anane Kabod. There were certain clouds, not like the clouds you see outside. We never saw these clouds before. These are spiritual clouds that were on top of us, underneath us, on the sides of us, ahead of us, and it put us in like a bubble where we were actually protected. No snakes and scorpions were able to penetrate, no wild animals. In the day, it served as a cooling condition, air condition. And at night, it served as a heater for the Jewish people. It flattened out the ground for us. So we never had to walk uphill or down. We never had to worry about a mountain. If we needed to walk, the cloud would go ahead of us like a tractor and just smoothen the ground for us. It also protected us from our enemies. You know, as we're going on in the Midbar, we had enemies on the side of us that wanted to kill us. They're shooting arrows at us. Of course, why not? Like today, if you go to the Kotel sometimes, Bar Minan, the Arabs on top of the Temple Mount, they throw rocks. And what are you going to do? You're standing there at the Kotel, the rock comes down, gravity. There, the clouds protected us. It's almost as if it was an anti-defense system, where anti-missile system, where it caught all the the weapons. So we had these ananim, these clouds, for 40 years. Miraculous. So the rabbis tell us, one of the reasons we sit in the sukkah is so we can remember those clouds of glory. The sukkah is like a cloud. You go into the sukkah, it's outside, it has a little roof over it, flimsy roof. It has temporary walls. So it's zecher la'anane kavod. It's to commemorate the clouds of glory. Ladies, you have to remember this. Well, actually, I'm going to tell you something now. Ladies, technically, are exempt from sitting in the sukkah. That might be good news for you, or not. For the simple reason, sukkah is a mitzvah that's bound by time. Any positive commandment that has a time to it, ladies are exempt. So technically, if a lady is cold, or doesn't want to sit in the sukkah for whatever reason, or for example, it happens sometimes, where there's not enough room in the sukkah, so of course the men would get a first priority in this case, because they're men. No. because they're obligated. Because they're obligated to sit in the sukkah. The lady, God bless them, they can sit in the house. But my point is, which lady do we know doesn't go into the sukkah? Just like the ladies don't have to hear shofar. The ladies are exempt from shofar. Shofar is bound by time. But tell me a lady that doesn't make it her business to go to the shul to make sure that she hears shofar. That's why God loves the Jewish people so much. Because even when we're exempt, We go the extra mile to do things that we're not obligated to do. You're in a very good position because we always want God to go the extra mile for us. We don't want God to judge us according to the book. We always want, you know, close the book, just give us extra. Don't follow the strictness of the judgment. Whenever a lady does a mitzvah above and beyond the obligation, so God reacts to the person in kind. So God says, you went above and beyond, even though you weren't obligated, I'm also going to treat you above and beyond, even though the book says you don't deserve it, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. The book says you don't have to sit in the sukkah. The simple reason, just so you should know for the record, why you're exempt from all these mitzvot that are bound by time, is because the Torah recognizes that a lady has an overriding obligation to the house, to the husband, and to the children. If ladies are going to be obligated to do all these mitzvot, then the Jewish home is going to be neglected. The last thing we want to happen is that a husband comes home from work, and the children are not dressed yet, and they're still walking around in their dirty clothes, and there's no food for anybody to eat, and you ask the children, where's mommy? And the child points to the back, and the mother's in the sukkah shaking the lulav, doing hosha'anot. And you say, hey, where's dinner? So, the rabbis were smart. They don't want them to do mitzvot, because they have a bigger mitzvah. It's more important than sitting in the sukkah and listening to the shofar and doing whatever you're doing. The most important obligation is to run a Jewish home. That's higher than all these things. So God was merciful and said, you know what? I'll exempt you from all this other stuff. So you're free to do your primary career, your primary vocation, which is running the house. But as I said, with all your exemptions, there's not a lady that's not going to walk into the sukkah on Sukkot. Ashrechem Yisrael. When you walk into the sukkah, you have to think of something. You have to think, I'm sitting in the sukkah to commemorate the clouds of glory that were in the midbar. Ah, but this is not a cloud. This is a sukkah. You're right. It's a commemoration. It's a zechir. We're remembering it. This is like a cloud of the midbar. According to some rabbis, this is mandatory. If you don't think this, you do not fulfill your obligation. Because any mitzvah that the purpose of the mitzvah is to remember something, if you didn't remember that item, so you didn't do the mitzvah. The whole purpose of the mitzvah is to remember, but you didn't remember. It's like a person, they puts a red string on his finger to remember something. So you ask the person, what's the red string on your finger? I forgot. You forgot, but that's the whole reason why you put it there, is to remember. So a person goes into the sukkah. What are you sitting in the sukkah for? I don't know. They told me, sit in the sukkah. What are you talking about? The whole reason for the sukkah is to remember the clouds. Ah, yeah, to remember the clouds. So you have to say that before you walk in. You don't have to say, but you think of it. In my sukkah, we get up before kiddush. Rabotai, we're going to now make kiddush. But you have to remember, what are we doing over here? We're sitting in the sukkah. Why? Somebody says, because God said. Oh, that's the best reason. Because God said, I drink to that. Because God said, that's the best reason. But why did God say it? You know why? So we remember the anane kavod that were in the midbar. Everybody agree? We agree. Okay, somebody banana, now we can make kiddush. My question is to you, when did we come out of Egypt? We came out of Egypt in the spring. Nisan, excellent. So then really, when did we first enjoy these clouds? In Nisan time. That's when we got into the wilderness. Why then do we celebrate Sukkot 6 months later in Tishri? If you're commemorating the Anane Kavod, why now commemorate it? Commemorate it when it happened. Just like we commemorate the Torah when it was given. Just like we commemorate Pesach when it happened. Commemorate the clouds when it happened. It happened when we came out of Egypt. So technically, there should be, according to my calendar, Pesach, and then 2 weeks later, Sukkot, and then 5 weeks later, Shavuot. So in 7 weeks, you knock off all the three holidays, You can stay in Florida. You don't have to come home for Pesach. You can stay in Florida for Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. Finish your Shalosh Negalim. Which means, why did the Torah put Sukkot where it put? You want a simple explanation to that? I'll give you a simple explanation. I didn't come to tell you the simple interpretations today, but a simple interpretation would be, because in the springtime, in the olden days, people would go out of their houses and live in huts. That's what you do in the spring. You build a little temporary structure on the beach or on the field, and you're outside, it's cool at night, and things like that. This time of year, most people are bringing the patio furniture inside. They're closing up the backyard and the barbecue. They're not going outside into the to the Shuk Rabim, or the outside, I should say, the outdoors, to live in a hut. So therefore, we want to show God and the world that don't think we're going into the Sukkah for pleasure. In the spring, it would look like we're doing it to take a little vacation, to take a little respite. But when you do it in this time of year, where everybody's going in, and what are we doing? We're going out. So what are you doing? Ah, for God. Well, it looks like you're doing it for God. Now nobody can question that we're doing this for our own pleasure or benefit. It's getting cold already. It's getting windy. Good. It's a simple explanation. The third question that I want to ask you is, there were other miracles in the Midbar besides the clouds. There was two other things that happened which were phenomenal. What were they? The man. There used to be man. Man is like food, bread. Used to fall every day from the heavens to your door. If you were tzaddik, it came to your door. You got delivery, direct delivery. If you weren't just a tzaddik, you had to walk down the block. Rasha, you had to walk miles in order to get it. Anyway, this was food from heaven. Hamotzi lechem min hashamayim. And it was miraculous. Whatever you thought about, that's what it tasted. And it was no waste. It was all nutritional. It was unbelievable. Because again, there's no supermarkets in the Midbar. There's no vegetation in the Midbar. So without the man, God forbid. We don't have a commemoration for the man. We don't do anything to commemorate that. There's another thing that happened. There was a well. The well of Miriam. The well of Miriam used to trail the Jewish people wherever we went. It was a rock. And you open the rock, and water comes out, fresh water. And it was unlimited. Usually a well doesn't move. A well is a well. It stays in its place. This well was a moving well. It came with the Jewish people. I want you to know, by the way, many people don't know this. Just like the man tasted like anything you wanted it to taste like, the water of Miriam also tasted like any drink you wanted it to taste like. So a person, if they had the man, let's say he had kavanah to have a steak, has kavanah, so then he wants to have a Merlot wine, because he's having a steak, so he has kavanah, Merlot wine, he has wine. So it wasn't only water. If somebody wants to have lemonade, kavanah, lemonade, tastes like lemonade. White wine, and so on and so forth. Amazing miracles. But there's no commemoration to that. We don't have anything in the holidays where we say, okay, we do this, why did they specifically choose the ananim to commemorate? Why don't you commemorate everything? We should make a holiday where you take two pieces of bread, and to be honest with you, I'm going to say something. We don't commemorate the man, really. But there is a little commemoration, if I want to be honest with you. We do something. Every Shabbat, we have two breads. For the reason that on Shabbat the man did not fall. They didn't deliver man on Shabbat. So on Friday we used to get a double portion of man. That's why when Friday night comes, we have two breads on the table to commemorate the two portions that came on Erev Shabbat. Also, I want to tell you that the man, when it fell, it couldn't have fallen on the ground. What happens when food falls on the ground? You throw it away, you don't eat it. It's dirty. Now, that's even if it falls on the rug, which the rug is clean. Imagine if it falls in the wilderness on dirt. Who's going to eat such food? So how did the... So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did was, first he brought the dew down, like a layer of dew, and the water, it layered the ground. A thick layer of water. Then the man fell on it. It was like a tray. The man fell on it. And then, well, now you have all the germs in the air. So the guy picks it up. It's exposed. You don't leave bread exposed. So God sent out a second layer of dew, and it covered it. So therefore there was a double covering. That's why on Shabbat, where do we put the challah? We put the challah on a board. We don't put it right on the table. We put it on a board. That's the bottom layer. And then we take a covering and we cover it on top. So it's exactly like the man. It has the covering underneath, the covering on top, and the two in between. So we have Shabbat to commemorate the man. So scratch that man. Man, we do. But we don't do anything for the water. The Mayim, we have nothing. So to understand this, I'm going to explain to you what a great rabbi called Rav Hida said. Rav Hida, Rabbi Chaim Yosef David Azulay. We have to be very proud as Sephardim that this Rav Hida is one of our greatest rabbis and one of the greatest luminaries that Judaism ever produced. He wrote over 80 Sefarim. Each Sefer was a classic. And he himself was very, very unique. He was a master of all subjects. As a matter of fact, he was so holy, Rav Hida. He used to learn every morning. He had a study partner. He used to learn with two people every morning in his house. One day his servant came and brought coffee. Brought three cups of coffee for the rabbi and for the two friends that he was learning with. Rav Hida took the coffee and he said, "These two don't drink coffee." "Oh, I'm sorry." He says, "Yeah, because they're angels. Angels don't drink coffee." "Oh, the Malachim?" He learned with Malachim on a regular basis. Rav Hida says the following. When the Jewish people worshipped the golden calf, and Moshe Rabbeinu came down, the pasuk says, "Vayar Moshe et ha'am," and Moshe saw the nation, "Ki paruahu," they were exposed. What does it mean they were exposed? So he says, and I quote, that the clouds of glory went away. Now they were exposed. Because normally if you would look from on top, you couldn't see the Jewish people. Because there was a cloud blocking them. Here Moshe Rabbeinu came down to the mountain, and there was a hole in the cloud. Kiparuahu. God got angry at the Jewish people and said, "I do so much for you. Now you worship a golden calf? There's no more clouds. The clouds dissipated. Now for the first time since they came out of Egypt, the Jewish people now were exposed to all the elements. They were in great danger." And this was God's sign to say, "I'm angry at you. I'm not, why should I protect you?" God wanted to destroy us. Oh, so now listen to what happened. Moshe Rabbeinu went up to God to pray. "Please God, you have to forgive them. This is very bad. You have to forgive them." He stayed up in the heavens 40 days and 40 nights. God didn't say, "I forgive them" yet. So he went up another 40 days and another 40 nights. After the second 40, God said to Moshe, "Salahti, I forgive them." You know which day that was? Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, it's amazing how these things work out. I'll give you the history. Not that you're interested so much, but it's good to know the dates. Moses came, the Torah was given on the 6th of Sivan. Chazak Baruch, we got the Torah, the gift, Ahavta Otan, beautiful. 40 days later, Moshe Rabbeinu went up to get the rest of the Torah. That was, we got the Ten Commandments, we got the rest of the Torah. He came down on Sheva Asar B'Tammuz, on the 17th of Tammuz. That's when we did the Egel. That's why till today we fast on Sheva Asar B'Tammuz. Sheva Asar B'Tammuz was the day we did the Egel. Now Moshe Rabbeinu says we have a mess. He went up on the 18th of Tammuz for 40 days. He came back down on Rosh Chodesh Elul. He told the people, listen, God, he didn't say I'm forgiving us yet, so I have to go up again and work on it. He went back on Rosh Chodesh Elul for another 40 days. He came back down on Kippur. And everybody was waiting by the mountain. What is he going to say? And Moshe Rabbeinu comes down, first of all, with a new set of tablets, which they knew right away when they saw the new set of tablets. They knew it's good. That means God forgave us. And Moshe Rabbeinu announces, Salahti, we're good. Ah, Baruch Hashem, he forgave us. That's why Yom Kippur is the day of forgiveness. One of the reasons. Because that's the day that God forgave the Jewish people for the golden calf. So usually history repeats itself. Once already it happened once that God forgives, so then every year God is in the mood of forgiving on that day. But let me tell you something about forgiveness. Forgiveness doesn't mean that we're back to being friends again. Which means, if somebody wrongs me, I can say, I forgive you. But I don't want no forgiveness anymore. You go your way, I'm going to go my way. I don't have any claims against you. I'm not going to hold revenge. I'm not going to harm you. But it doesn't mean I have to go for dinner with you. It doesn't mean I have to go on vacation with you. I forgive you. That's it. I'm not going to marry you now. I forgive you. So on Kippur, salahti. But the relationship was still strained. The clouds didn't come back yet. The clouds were still missing. From the Egel, from the 17th of Tammuz till Kippur, there were no clouds. And even after God said, I forgive, there were still no clouds. On the 11th day of Tishri, Motzei Kippur, the day after Kippur, Moshe Rabbeinu got up and made an announcement. He said, Rabotai, we need to build a Mishkan. Well, what is a Mishkan? English, they call it a tabernacle. What it means is, it's a movable synagogue. We have a movable temple. Portable. You can transport it. It has a mizbeach, an altar. It has a table. It has a holy of holies. It has an ark. You know what the tabernacle is. But we need money to build this. Gold and all expensive materials. So they made it an appeal. This appeal was after Kippur. We don't do that. We make an appeal on Kippur itself. Imagine somebody coming after Kippur. Enough, Rabbi, you killed us on Kippur and all the appeals. Now I make another appeal after the holiday. Well, anyway, Moshe Rabbeinu said we need a lot of money. They went around and they collected for 2 days. On the 12th of Tishri and on the 13th of Tishri. After they collected for 2 days, something happened that will never happen again in history. I guarantee it. Moshe Rabbeinu got up and said, we have enough money. Now I'm sure that never happened where they got up and said, we're good, we don't have anything, you know, it gave refunds. Anyway, so that was on the 14th that Moshe counted the money. We have enough to build the Mishkan. We're good. The 15th of Tishri, God said, look how good the Jewish people are. They raised the money so quickly, and they're already starting to build a temple for me. Guess what happened on the 15th of Tishri? The clouds came back. So now you understand, that's what it means when the Gaon de Vilna said, Atah b'chartanu, you chose us as a nation, that's Pesach. Ahavta otanu, that is Shavuot, when you gave us the Torah. V'ratzita banu, meaning you became appeased by us, that's Sukkot. Because that's when the clouds came back, and that's why Sukkah corresponds to the clouds of glory. And that's when God showed, you know what, I love you. Because He gave us back that gift. That's like saying, we're fighting, I forgive you. But then I caught you up. Let's go out for dinner. Oh, now I know it's finished. Now I know really the mechila is genuine and the relationship is back to where it was. And that's what God said. The clouds come back. Now we understand the second question that I asked you. How come you don't celebrate Sukkot in the spring? Because we're not celebrating clouds. That's not the clouds we're celebrating. We're celebrating the fact that God forgave us. We're celebrating the fact that God now, the relationship was repaired. The clouds was just an indication. It's not the clouds. Just like you don't make a holiday for the man. And just like you don't make a holiday for the well of Midian. We're not making a holiday for the clouds. The holiday is to celebrate that God accepted us again. We came close to God. We sinned. There was a fallout period. And then there was a forgiveness, but more important, now there was an appeasement. Now there was a certain love that God showed. That's why we make it this time of year, and the Sukkah now is a different understanding. You're remembering Anane Kavod, of course, but what you really have to remember when you remember Anane Kavod is that the sin was erased. Now we understand another thing. This is a big hadush. You ask most people, Anane Kavod, they never heard of Anane Kavod in the first place. Why now? They don't understand, you're right, why now? Good question. Do it in the spring. Of course, because this is when the clouds came back. I want to be clear. You're not commemorating clouds per se. You're commemorating the return of the clouds, which really is the hadush. That God now said, now that I forgive you, but it's back like it never happened. Which is why, you know what the mitzvah of Sukkot is? To be happy. Zeman simchatenu. Because there's no greater happiness when you make peace with God. On Sukkot, that's when we made shulim, we made peace with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's when everything was totally, totally erased. That's why, if you look in the Torah, there's a big hadush. This I saw from the rabbi called Meshech Chokmah. Listen to what he said. The Torah talks about Sukkot a few times. Once in Parashat Mishpatim, and once in Parashat Re'eh. In Parashat Mishpatim, the Torah calls the holiday Hag Ha'asif, the holiday of harvesting. This time of year in Israel is the harvest time. What does harvest mean? They cut all their crops, they gather them, and they put it in the silos. The wheat grows during the summer months. This is the time where they cut everything. So they call it Hag Asif, the holiday of Asif, of harvesting. In Parashat Re'eh, however, it says Hag HaSukkot. Oh. Why one time Hag Asif, one time Hag HaSukkot? You know what the explanation is? Because when the Torah wrote it in Parashat Mishpatim, it was before the Jewish people worshipped the golden calf. We had the holiday, but it wasn't Sukkot. There, it was just a holiday of harvesting. Lehavdil, I didn't want to give an example. Like Thanksgiving, you have a holiday for whatever. They ate turkey, a few Puritans and Indians. They ate some candied yams and pumpkins. So Lehavdil, on Sukkot, it's a happy time because we're harvesting the crop. The farmers were happy. It's a happy time. Whenever you're collecting money and profits, it's the man simchatenu. So originally that's what Sukkot was. By the way, there was no Sukkah originally. You just collected the crop. It was a party. You celebrated. Everybody was happy. After they worshipped the Egel and the clouds of glory left, and they didn't come back till a few days after Kippur on the 15th of Tishri, that's at the end of the Torah. Then the Torah says, Hag HaSukkot. Now it's a different holiday. Now we have to add the Sukkah to this harvesting situation. Now it's no longer just a farmer's holiday. Now it's a holiday to commemorate that the Sukkah came back, the Anane Kavod came back. Once you understand this secret that I gave you here now, you understand something else as well. Did you ever ask yourself, why are all the holidays bunched next to each other? Our calendar is top heavy. All the holidays are in 1 month. Rosh Hashanah, Kippur, Sukkot. If I was making the calendar, I put Sukkot maybe somewhere in the middle of the year just to balance it out. We had so many holidays already. Makes sense? 3-4 days after Kippur, another holiday? But now you understand the reason. Of course. Because Kippur, we just got forgiveness from God. God said, I forgive you. But that's not enough. We don't want just forgiveness. We don't want forgiveness, and then, but I don't want to talk to you anymore. You're forgiven, but I don't want to see your face. No. Now we want appeasement. Now we want it to take it to the next level. Now we want to go to a higher step. So Sukkot is part of the Teshuvah season. Sukkah is a holiday of Teshuvah. If I would tell you, what are the holidays of Teshuvah? You'd say, oh, high holidays. What's Shana Kippur? What's Sukkot? I don't know. Sukkot is something different. No. Sukkot is the final stage of the high holidays. Rosh Hashanah, we announce God as the king. Kippur, we get forgiveness. But that's only forgiveness. Sukkot is where God says, now you're invited into my house. Sukkah is God's house. You understand? That's when God invites us for dinner. You know, come, I want you to come into my house. Oh, now he said, that's Teshuvah. Now, that's the cherry on the cake. We would be happy if with Kippur alone. You forgave me, I'm happy. At least I don't have to get punished. But God says, but you can't come into my house because you did something. I forgave you, but please go eat over there. On Sukkot, Borei Olam says, you're invited into my house. Please come eat something with me. How do I know Sukkah is God's house? I cannot go into all the Zohar HaKadosh what it says, but Sukkah is a very different mitzvah than any other mitzvah that we know. Every other mitzvah, except for a few, is external. If I put on my tefillin, where's the tefillin? On my arm. See, it's on my arm. My leg is not involved. It's on my head. Okay, but my body is not involved. Any mitzvah that you do, if I hang up a mezuzah, okay, so I'm hanging up a mezuzah, my hands are involved. Very few mitzvot, can you enter the mitzvah? A sukkah, you're in the mitzvah. This mitzvah is surrounding you. It's three-dimensional, six-dimensional. You're in the mitzvah. Can I walk into a mitzvah? I can't walk into tefillin. I can't walk into the mezuzah. But I can walk into a sukkah. The Zohar Kadosh talks about sukkah as a certain light, an or makif it's called, a light that surrounds you, which is the light of the Holy Shekhinah, which incidentally, as ladies, there's another mitzvah that you could do, which surrounds you, which is on the highest level, and that's mikveh. In the mikveh, you're surrounded by in the waters. And you're surrounded in the mitzvah. That's why the or, the holy light, comes on the lady after she comes out of the mikveh. There's or. Because you entered a certain area, which is the most purest area in the world. Or makif. Comes Sukkot time, God says, Baruch Abba, come sit in the sukkah. So that's why the Gemara says, Barman now, if it rains on the first night of Sukkot, wait, that's a bad sign. Why, they say it's going to rain tomorrow night? I shouldn't have told you that then. Okay. Don't worry, don't believe them. They're false prophets, the weathermen. They don't know anything. Alright, so I'll tell you something so they won't feel so bad. First of all, you understand why it's a curse now. Because you kiss in the sukkah. It's always as God saying, you're not invited to come eat with me yet. Oh, now we thought, oh, we built it, we came in. The Gemara gives an example as a king tells his servant, please prepare for me some wine. And the king and the servant goes and prepares and does and everything. And then the king takes it and throws it in his face. God says, go build a sukkah, schach, decorations, electric, do, and then what? I'm not interested. Just for the record, so you don't get too despondent, this is only talking in Israel. Why? Because it's really not the rainy season in Israel now. So for it to rain in Israel now, it's a sign. But for it to rain here in New York, it always rains over here. In Panama, now it's the rainy season. It rains every single day. What are you going to say now? Oh, it's a curse? It's a normal weather. We know that 6 months it rains every day. But in a region where it's not supposed to rain like Israel, the rainy season really doesn't begin in Eretz Yisrael until after Sukkot, a few weeks after Sukkot. To have an early rain, that already is a bad sign. Incidentally, I should point out to you also the following. There is a big mahloket between the Sephardim and the Ashkenazim regarding the first night of Sukkot. Now that you're telling me it's going to rain, I want you to know the halakha. According to the Ashkenazim, if it rains on the first night of Sukkot, they sit in the sukkah in the rain. Why? First night is a big mitzvah from the Torah to eat bread in the sukkah, and they don't want to give it up so easily, and under all circumstances. They have to eat kezayit, and they run out, and they finish maybe inside, but they have to have inside. According to the Sephardim, once it starts raining, where it's significant, now we're talking about a couple of drops, where you cannot have the food, the food's going to spoil. Halakha says, you're not supposed to sit in the sukkah. Go eat in the house, even in the house kiddush. Don't even try to make kiddush in the sukkah. For what reason? It's raining. What all I'm saying, go inside. You're pushing it? You have to push it. If after you finish making kiddush inside, it dries up, then you can go out and have kezayit pat or kabetza, 2 ounces of bread. That's what you're supposed to do. It happened 1 year, we were in deal for Sukkot. We came home from Knis. Oh, it started to rain. We were very upset. Even though we know it's not a curse, but we want to sit in the sukkah. We're looking forward to it. So we ate in the house. After it stopped, we came outside. We looked at the sukkah. It was all wet. So we took a towel, we dried off a chair or two, we'd have to make a big thing. We took a kezayit of Syrian bread with a kabesa, a shikad the shadows of Sivanu, the Sheba Sukkah, a Mosirah Manaris. We ate and we fulfilled the mitzvah. But let's say it doesn't stop raining. That's it. Then you don't eat in the sukkah. So that's something that you have to know as well. Furthermore, once you understand this, Rosh Hashanah is related to Kippur. Kippur is related to Sukkot. It's all connected. So my idea to put Sukkot somewhere in the middle of the year, it belongs where it is. That's when we got the clouds back. That's the Hanane Kavod. That's why if you look in the Torah, when it talks about Sukkot, well, when it talks about Rosh Hashanah, it says, U'bachodesh ha-shavi'i, in the seventh month. Tishri is the seventh month of the year. Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, Elul, Tishri. Tishri is the seventh month. All the holidays are in the seventh month. It says, Anosh Shah, Ubahodesh Shavi'i. Kippur, Ubahodesh Shavi'i. When it comes to Sukkot, what does it say? Ubahodesh Shavi'i Hazeh. In this seventh month, what is adding the extra word Hazeh? Just say, Hodesh Shavi'i. The Torah is going out of its way to say, in this seventh month that has the two other holidays, in this one, meaning Sukkah is related to the month. Don't think we just put Sukkot in the seventh month arbitrarily. U'bachodesh ha-shivi'i hazeh, this seventh one, the famous one that has Rosh Hashanah and has Kippur, it has to have Sukkot as well. And that's where the Simcha comes in of Sukkot. That's why it's such a joyous time of year, because this is the time where we enter the Sukkah. Now, you should also keep in mind, because you're entering God's house in the Sukkah, the Zohar calls it Siladim Himnuta, the huts or the shade of faith. We're entering God's chamber. One has to treat the Sukkah with great respect. The Sukkah is like a synagogue. Whatever you wouldn't do in Bet Knesset almost, you shouldn't do in a sukkah. You have to treat it with the utmost. I'm going to tell you something now. But I'm going to tell you introduction so I can't get into trouble like I got into trouble the first time I said it. I'll tell you the story. It's an amazing thing. Rabbis have to be careful. Hachamim always told me that. Hachamim is zeharu b'divrichim. You're a rabbi. You have to be careful what you say. People listening to what you're saying, make sure you're very clear. You don't listen to... I was giving a class in one of the shuls in the community. They invited me, Hacham, we want you every Sunday morning to give shiur to the kids. Baruch haba, my pleasure. I came the first Sunday. It was this time of year, right now. I'm teaching the boys about Sukkot. Sukkot. So in the class I told them, boys, you know how precious the Sukkah is? You know how holy the Sukkah is? According to some rabbis, Kafa Hayim, Rabbeinu Yaakov Hayim Sofer, big Sephardi rabbis, according to some rabbis, then I told, but we don't follow it necessarily, but I'm just showing you how great the mitzvah is. They don't let the goyim in the Sukkah. Person has a maid. You want to clean up the tent? Outside. They give the tent. I said, now we don't follow it to the highest degree, but I just want to show you. Anyway, the class ended. The committee calls me up. Don't come back next Sunday. Why not? What happened? All the kids came home. The chedam can't come in the sukkah. Our wives are killing us now. You ruined the whole sukkot for them. How are they going to clean the sukkah now? No, I didn't say that. I was just giving them an example to show. But then I said, the truth is, a kid, you can't, with all the introductions, they don't hear the introduction. You heard? So I'm telling you, ladies, it's not a avon if a goya goes into the sukkah. It's not a avon. But there are some people that are extra careful, because sukkah is very holy, that they don't even let outsiders into the sukkah, because this is considered a special level, which is even higher than the kinis, because in the kinis we allow it. But the sukkah is on a higher madriga. I'm just giving you an example. Somebody once built a sukkah. This was in Deal. We were driving by. He said, Hakam, come to my sukkah. Come visit. Okay, well, come on Sukkot. We're not doing anything. We came to visit him. He has a big TV in his sukkah. He was boasting. Look at this. Didn't you say the sukkah has to be like your house? So it is like my house. He sits over there. Didn't mean like that. Doesn't mean like that. He's supposed to put a TV in his sukkah. Nor are you supposed to play cards in the sukkah or toilet or things like that. The sukkah is a... Imagine somebody comes to the kinis now with a toilet set, starts playing a toilet in the sukkah. Kinis, not niceness in the kinis. Same thing in the sukkah, has to be because it's a higher level. There's much more to say. I'm also busy as well as you are. We'll suffice with this. Simhan simchatenu because of the teshuvah, because of the acceptance. That's what we mean. Atabachartanu Pesach. Ahavtatanu Shavuot. Latzitabas, when the clouds came back, that's Sukkot. Ladies, God bless you all. May you have a good holiday. You should be b'simcha. You should reach high levels of happiness. Come visit us at Simchat Torah. The synagogue is open. We'll have real simcha with the Sefarim. And God willing, we'll pick up our class. This is what, Thursday? Next Thursday is Sukkot. Sukkot, we're too busy being happy. And then the following Thursday I'll be away. So you're going to miss Parashat Bereshit. But I'm not the only rabbi. There's a lot of rabbis that give classes. You can go other places. And then the week after, Bezat Hashem, we'll have it.